Ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Well, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in conjunction with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Oi, it's been a long day already, and I'm sure those of you in the United States who are suffering under the regime of Barack H.O. Barry know exactly what I'm talking about. In other news, New Zealand police have had their culture, quote-unquote, been a little, shall we say, tarnished. Supposedly, police structure in New Zealand makes it very, very easy for corruption to go on through, according to the New Zealand Herald. Unsurprising to me, but of course, like I always say, never surprised, always shocked, particularly to the extent of things like this happening. And the police inquiry done by the State Services Commission into a sexual assault by members of police and associates of police. The following publication of allegations suggested that police officers might have deliberately undermined or mishandled investigations into complaints of sexual assault that had been made against other officers. And today's report by PricewaterhouseCoopers said New Zealand police was virtually unique among policing jurisdictions and its comparative freedom from entrenched or systematic corruption. It also said that another sign of health was the encasing maturity of strategic vision and the leadership and innovation that was happening within the police reform program. It said that police at all levels need to grasp that there is a need for fundamental change. It's kind of what I've been talking about the whole freaking time, that the whole system is really, really, well, effed up, to put it nicely. Oh, the corruption. Yeah, it's pretty nasty, man. I mean, seriously, if you cannot trust your police, you know, to not, if you can't trust police to investigate sexual assault or even investigate other officers, regardless of whatever the complaint is, what can you do? You know? I mean, come on. Our society is so fundamentally flawed. If the very enforcers of supposed reason, law, you know, that kind of thing, don't think that they are held accountable to it themselves, doesn't that just tick you? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And Rush 89 FM in Hamilton. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, thanks to GorillaMedia.co.nz. And before the show today, I did a quick interview with a guy, Gordon, who's been having a little bit of problems with the police related to that New Zealand Herald article there. And, yeah, man, you can never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, underestimate, overestimate how corrupt the police are, how brutal and scumbaggish they are. Even real trusted ones and high up ones that have been involved in community policing, for example, an officer named Alf, which I believe Will you should be familiar with, was involved in his case and covering it up too. So
really, Mr. Blair, Alf Blair, interesting.
That's right.
Yeah, you see, we helped get rid of Alf Blair here in my local hometown. Then he was succeeded by a couple of other scumbags, but you know, that's just the way the world works. As they say, eternal vigilance for eternal liberty. Look, it's a problem. I mean, I haven't got a problem with police as such. It's just any hierarchical power instrument that you impose upon people is going to turn corrupt. They could be a ice skating club. I mean, it doesn't matter. this is the problem with, I think, liberalism today and how it's been interpreted and the left and this whole idea of a big government that serves and protects people, it ends up being just a middle management team to go out and micromanage our lives and tax and trace us. And until people figure that out, all these other little problems that stem from that are going to keep going and going and going, and people are going to be complaining about police abuse and rape and huge taxation forever and ever until they address the actual root causes of it. And no one does. No one understands basic political principles, such as the idea that me and Vinny would probably be seen as more classical liberal, as in early 1800s John Locke sort of liberalism. Rather than today, liberalism's turned into, I don't care what the government does, and, stop being an evil right-winger and having principles. I mean, that's what liberalism today has turned into. So it's really sad. I mean, what do people expect, though? Of course everything's going to turn sour.
It's probably the worst thing that you could ever really conceive of is to have the establishment, the people that are in these trusted positions, betray you, betray the public trust, and betray justice itself, and pervert the course of justice. You know, after all, they're supposed to be the purveyors, protectors, and adjudicators of it. And it seems that more often than not, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I only look at the, I only wind up hearing about all the bad stuff that happens, because isn't that interesting, Will, how people will always talk about the bad stuff, but they'll very, very rarely will you hear about the good stuff, you know what I'm saying? And it's kind of like when you have these bad experiences, they mount up, but if there's one good experience, it kind of overshadows all of them, which is very interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's another insight into the human psyche, isn't it, really? But, I mean, I think it's our job to expose some of the bad things going on, not because we're pessimists or just down people or anything, but because there's too many people imagining society is better than it even is. You know what I mean? Not just focusing on the good parts, but then using those good parts to kind of forget about the other, forget about the mold in the corner sort of thing. And at the same time as doing that, they're allowing the mold in the corner to just take over everything. And so we have to show up the bad things as much as people don't want to look at them, as much as people will then call us fearmongers or pessimists or whatever they want to say. That has to be done, but in a rational way that can be broken down and documented and proven.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense.
And in some ways, that's the worst part about it, is that it's all real. You know, and you wish for at some case that the conspiracy deniers were right. You know, David Rockefeller doesn't exist. Oh, great, fantastic. You know, you know, that would be wonderful if this stuff wasn't going on. But the fact is that it is going on, and unless you are capable of manufacturing some description of understanding of that reality, the reality will never change. This is the difficulty I find with dealing with people in a lot of ways, is that they're not actually really willing to sacrifice anything in order to get any form of change. They're not willing to do any research. They're not willing to, you know, put themselves in danger or risk anything. However, there is a smaller minority of people who are willing to risk everything, who do devote themselves, you know, hand over fist in order to face up corruption and take it down. And we often give a lot of plug play to those kind of people on the show.
You know what, Benny, I mean, I've done
it so much.
You bring up a good point as to what people are willing to put on the line. You know, I was in the supermarket the other day and I ran into friend of mine, used to play a bit of pool together, hang out together, and he's probably about, you know, 10 years older than myself, good guy. And he was a businessman in sort of a Newmarket area of Auckland here, and in property management and so on. And he was asking me what I was doing. I said, oh, I'm doing the show, you know, me and Vinny, and he was all kind of interested. He's a politically thinking guy, and he was like, oh, I have to tune in sometime. I said, yeah, what are you up to these days? And he goes, oh, I just got a job with the council. I'm now working for the super city here in Auckland. And, you know, I didn't warn him about the show, saying we rip into those guys on a daily basis or anything. I just said, okay, that's cool. You know, you make sure you tune in. But what made me think was he's the sort of guy who's very smart, politically aware, but then at the same time, it's like if it weren't for all the gadgets, if it weren't for him being able to have a nice house and a nice V8 that he cruises around in and all the trappings, if it weren't for all the gadgets, he'd be on our side. He'd be on the show today.
Well, it's interesting that you call them trappings because that's exactly what they do to you.
But so you can have all those things and not focus on them, not sell out to them. You can have those things and you can still be on our side, you see? You can have the best of both worlds if you want to live a double life like that, or you can give it all away, or you can do what you want to do. The point is, just because you take something from the system, i.e. their houses and their cars and all the material possessions, doesn't mean you then have to love John Key and love all the fake ideologues out there. It doesn't mean you have to morally sell out to them. Just as their currency is fake, just as all these material things at the end of the day, they're going to rust away and dissolve, and they're going to depreciate at 30% a year. Just as that is the case, you can have a fake attachment to the system that empowers such. You know, they give you fiat currency, you give them fiat respect.
Manufactured fake respect.
Yeah, just don't give them your heart and soul.
Hey, well, they don't deserve it, really, do that, because they've got no heart and they've got no soul themselves, and that's all that they want from you is something which they don't have, you know? And, you know, maybe that's really the baseline of our society, isn't it, really? That everybody wants what they don't have already, you know? Nobody's satisfied with what they've got. They always want more. What? And you know, I admit that I'm a victim of this trap as well. You know, like the Vinnie Eastwood show with Will, it's not as it doesn't have as much effect as I wish for it, and I want more and more and more. You know, I want to help wake people up more and more.
It's not
and
the same
more.
Thing necessarily, you know, like greed.
Well, it isn't a principle. I mean, the intention is different, but the practice in itself is more or less the same.
No, because in principle, it actually has principle. Whereas gathering up, items from the warehouse or from Sam's Club or from, you know, wherever, doesn't actually achieve anything. That's not real hunter gathering. But gathering up important ideas and disseminating ideas and breaking down the current structure is something based upon a principle that you want something better for society. You want something better for your people. You know, mm-hmm, rather than just mm-hmm. hoarding material possessions, it's a different sort of greed. So your greed is a hunger for people, right? It's a hunger for humanity's own betterment, rather than I just want to adorn this palace here with the most, obnoxious pictures and just $50,000 pieces of jewelry and ridiculous sort of trappings that achieve nothing for people. When you could be using such resources, monetary resources, for a whole lot more good. I mean, that's principally the difference, isn't it, Vinny? Mm-hmm. We're trying to do something. Other people are trying to ride the tide, go with the flow.
Well, and again, there is a difference, but also at the same time, I like to have a look at the similarities. You know, for example, if anything happened to one of these people who love going along with the system, if anything happened really, really bad to them, like happens to a lot of us activists and things of that nature, you know, whether it be police harassment or being demonized in the media or having some description of bad thing happen to you, it would probably energize them into doing something, right? But it hasn't happened to them yet. And I came up with this idea of truth or false flags, you know, where like, a whole bunch of truthers would like dress up in, police riot gear or something and go to a protest and then lay into all the protesters and stuff like that in order to beat them into waking up. Yeah, I mean, well, that's just a joke, of course, ladies and gentlemen. But hey, it would be interesting to see that its effect, because false flag terrorism is an incredibly effective tool, isn't it? At fermenting public will. But they carry out false flag terrorism in order to make people afraid, to make people suck up to the government.
Yeah. Is
there any false flag terrorism out there that actually works to wake people up to the New World Order and to energize them into resisting corruption at every base level?
The state already carries out false flags against truthers all the time. What do you think Fox News and Glenn Beck's about? I mean they are constantly making us the enemy. They're constantly demonizing anyone with radical anti-establishment thoughts. I mean those false flags are going on constantly, targeted against us. 9/11 wasn't targeted against truthers. 9/11 was a typical false flag against the majority of the population they need to maintain control over. But, but Fox News now and this whole disinfo campaign, now a lot of truth's coming out. I think we are being set up as a straw man constantly.
Well, we're kind of being drawn out as the bad guy here. And I don't know about you, Will, but I see myself as the bad guy, not because I think I actually am a bad guy, but because of the possibility that I might be corrupted, that some intelligence agency could come up to me and start giving me money or whatever to start spreading disinfo or whatever. I don't think these things are actually going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not some description of kook, but... instances. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? And the accumulation of power, I see myself as the bad guy, so that I don't, so that I can't delude myself into thinking that whatever I'm doing is good. You know what I'm saying?
I
prevent myself from becoming an actual bad guy by pretending to be one. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like an undercover cop. Starts to think that he's a criminal when he's just trying to be an undercover cop.
Well, I think that's a bit warped, to be honest. I don't have to play maybe with other people, but I don't have to play mind games with myself. You see what I mean? I know what I am. I know I'm not doing anything particularly bad. I know I'm not perfect all the time. So I wouldn't see myself as a bad guy. I know what I'd say if Warren Tucker from SIS come up to me. I know what happens if you get involved in those groups. I mean, you think that you – I mean, all those freaks out there who sell out to these intelligence agencies, you think you're safe all of a sudden? You think that they haven't got another layer above you checking to make sure you're not a double agent, and then another layer above them? You think they don't have like 3 or 4 or 5 layers? And then you think if you come out at a later stage and you change your mind about something, that will be without consequence? I mean, it's ridiculous. I already know what you got to do, what I would do in that instance ahead of time, because it's this is a dangerous deep circle to try and get involved in. So you just keep out of it. I mean, you keep out of it, and you keep in the dangerous circle that happens to just be in the public hemisphere, nothing to do with intelligence agency skullduggery. So I don't think we need to see ourselves as the bad guys. I think we just need to see ourselves as ordinary people who say what needs to be said when a bunch of other supposedly ordinary people are being sold down the river and allowing themselves, because a certain level, you know, this individual responsibility. We went into that yesterday.
Yeah. And, you know, another story came out of New Zealand just today, in fact, where a man has been jailed for swearing at a judge for 28 days. All right. Man spends 28 days in jail for saying a word. You know?
It's the judge's discretion. That's their discretion.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, what do people expect? They need to start thinking of the government as a middleman, crooked, con artist, used car salesman. I mean, the government is a middle person and is becoming a middle person in just about every single human interaction and transaction.
Maybe they do perceive. Maybe that people do perceive the government as the corrupt institution that they are, right? But they don't follow that perception through to its logical conclusion. You know, people know that car salesmen and politicians lie through their teeth all the time, but they don't think to themselves, "Hey, this politician's lying all the time. Therefore, my entire government is a lie, and so I've got to start resisting it, lest we be led down the garden path into some description of mass grave."
Because they're drawn into the politics of person. Personality, they go, that individual, him or her, they're liars, but the whole system can't be, and I'm waiting for the new guy to come along and vote for him. That's how temperate and facile they are.
Oh, yeah. The solution will present itself. I don't have to be part of it. I'll just vote once every couple of years. That'll be good. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, proudly brought to you in partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. If you cruise to www.thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, you can check out our fabulous archives with all the amazing guests that we have had so far in the existence of this show. Now, the U.S. war on whistleblowers grows. This is in from Guerrilla Media. According to the managing news editor at antiwar.com, Jason Ditz, the remarks made by the country's judiciary are in line with efforts in the U.S. to intimidate potential whistleblowers and discourage them from this sort of activity. Seems like they're trying to make it a broad statement, but I think that they definitely have WikiLeaks in mind, Ditz says in an interview with Press TV on Tuesday. The U.S. Department of Justice made the remark as part of a filing pertaining to the detention of whistleblower Jeffrey Sterling. The filing, however, insisted that the stance was a general one and not specific to Sterling's case. Details of whistleblower Jeffrey Sterling's case were not ever made public. There is speculation, however, that it was related to the book State of War by James Risen. Sterling is the fifth person to be charged under the Espionage Act over matters related to the leakage of classified information. How very interesting. And, you know, it's when your country starts to attack people who tell the truth, that's when you've got to be worried. And in the United States, that's been happening for quite some time. And same with New Zealand, you know.
It's not a marker of tyranny, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not a marker of tyranny. It's just like when people start to fear their government more than government fears people, you know. I mean, it's another marker. When people are afraid and say, oh, you know, and start peeing their pants when a cop turns up, there's another marker. It's not a free society.
Well, you know, I don't think anybody listening to this show, you know, is silly enough to believe that we actually live in a real free society. Because after all, in a free society, would you be getting taxed or more than half of your income in one form or another of tax? I don't think so. Kind of seems like a slave society getting milked. And most of our income taxes, if not all of them, just go to interest on debt, when we don't even need to be in debt because we could print the money our frickin' selves. But no.
But Vinny goes to a roading and schools, and we can justify taking from the wealthy and giving to the poor. Don't you believe in the collective suffrage?
Collective suffrage. Speaking of collective suffrage, another article from Guerrilla Media. Israeli reactor linked to West Bank deaths in villages located in the south of the West Bank. Cancer cases, sterility and mental disorders have surged, particularly in the Avaria village, which has a population of over 35,000 people. International scientists have instigated the anomaly to find out what the reason behind it is. During the past 20 years, there has been a sharp increase in thyroid disorders, sterility, abnormal births and cancer cases. Mahmoud Sadia of the 10,000-strong International Physicians of the Prevention of Nuclear War said in an interview. One case was an 11-year-old boy who developed heart cancer. This disease happened to be one of 100 million people, so is extremely rare. The boy died recently, he said. The group, with the help of Al-Khali or Hebron University, has studied the possible impacts of Israeli's Dimona reactor, located in the Negev Desert, some 30 kilometers away from Avaria village. Governor of Al-Khali, Kamel Hebed, said, "Once last year we killed over 2,000 dogs in our region. They were not behaving normally and were very aggressive and huge in size. We do not own the needed technologies to investigate the matter, and we are also banned from traveling to the border areas. We have asked international organizations to intervene," he added. Uranium in the area has been tested at 10 times the permitted concentration by Al-Khali University, and the elements of thorium and cesium followed the same pattern of results. Cesium only emerges from nuclear explosions or nuclear activities and is 13 to 30 times the permitted concentration in five local villages in Palestine. The nuclear waste from Dimona power plant is buried under Palestinian state land and in some cases under Israeli settlements. It's not like the Palestinian state even has any land. It's not like there's actually any Palestinian state. in a nearby settlement, there are at least 20 cancer cases. They are too afraid to speak out. Every person over there gets around $20,000 a month from the US from the Israeli government in order to stay silent. And Israel pays $11 per barrel to bury a waste in this way. It would cost them over $5,000 a barrel if it was lawfully disposed of in other countries. But, you know, it has also been observed that the surrounding area currently has an unbalanced ecological system where reptiles and plants are almost gone, replaced by an increase in cockroaches, scorpions, and other insects known to be able to resist radiation.
Scorpions. Yeah. Beautiful, eh? Sounds like Arabian Nights.
Yep. You just love that.
Gigantic mutated scorpions. Yeah, place is nuts, isn't it, Vinny? I mean, well, what's wrong with cesium? Cesium isotopes getting around, I mean. Cesium is one of the most highly reactive. I mean, you get a chunk of cesium, you throw it in water and see what happens.
Dangerous stuff.
But it's not toxic, Vinny. I'm sure it's below toxic levels. Anything can be toxic. You know, you can die from excess water, don't you know? That's the sort of relativism we get.
I love that. Everybody's got to die sometime. Yeah, well, why don't you swallow the bloody thing of bleach under the sink then? I mean, come on. Seriously. Yeah, if we're all going to die anyway, why don't you just die today? Go ahead. Do it. Drink it. Drink it, I say.
it's like any debate we get into, right? It's like, rather than do 2 hours research, these people say, oh, we're going to die someday. and then they go and work for 10 hours for some ridiculous corporation. What sort of sense does that make? If nothing matters, if out of 2 hours worth of research into, I don't know, climate change or the eugenics program or into you know, declassified terror operations, if that doesn't matter, then why do you get up each morning and go to and get on the motorway with all the other drones and go to your favorite destination? I mean, why is that? Why don't you just stop doing that too? Why don't you say, I'm going to die one day, so I may as well not go to work and I may as well, I don't know, go surfing every day? Well, no, they don't really believe that, but they just bring out that excuse when they need to you know, justify them not having to research something that they should.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have any research. Well, do we actually have any archives, official archives of, you know, government secrecy and all of that, and all these classified documents and all of that that are available for public scrutiny?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. If you go to George Washington University, their online archives, you can download not the full document of declassified Operation Northwoods. I mean, you can't. I don't think you can get the sections where they talk about killing John Glenn in space and blaming it on Russian telecommunications.
Well, no, I mean, other archives of current classified documents that we can read.
Current classified documents? No. Of course not.
No, there aren't.
Well, so what the heck is being got? It's a democracy. We don't deserve that.
The point is that, you know, we don't know the level of what's going on here. You know, we have no idea because it's all secret. We're not allowed to know. And according to Gordon Duff, what is there, like 30,000 something people with top secret clearance in the United States today or something along those lines? And, you know, this stuff isn't being leaked. WikiLeaks, I could take a WikiLeak on them if I want. You know, they're not leaking anything we don't already know. You know?
Look, it's pretty straightforward. We don't need the problem is though, Vinny, we don't even need the declassified documents to know what's going on. As they've always said, 80% of intelligence is mainstream. You can just the proof is in the pudding what they're doing. You know what I mean? Whether they've used mini nukes in Iraq or not, or in Afghanistan or not, look, I don't know. We can't prove that without taking, you know, seismograph readings and background radiation readings and comparing them over certain time phases. I mean, we can't prove any of that. But the point is, they're engaged there in an illegal war. They used the justification based on a legal premise that was 9/11 that they staged themselves. Most of the anti-war movement that wants to stop that war can't bring themselves to realize that 9/11 is a false staged premise. If they could, the Bush administration would have been indicted. Most of them would have been in prison by now. You know, if the Keith Olbermans of the world, if the Michael Moores of the world, if the Noam Chomskys of the world, with the left-wing anti-war movement behind them, said, look, it's an inside job. Bush and Cheney totally did it. They rigged those buildings with explosives, and then they come down. If they got the movement on the ground behind those few names alone, Bush would be in prison by now. I guarantee it. And the New World Order would be one step closer to being exposed. The people, his handlers, the scum filth behind him, would be a whole lot closer to being exposed. But that isn't the case.
Well, that's the difficulty, isn't it, Will? The worst scum, and this is what I find very interesting about our world, is that people rarely get what they deserve. You know, for example, a very nice person who's, you know, well-to-do and doesn't hurt anybody, doesn't steal anything or anything like that, deserves a nice, happy, shall we say, stress-free existence. But they don't get it, do they? A war criminal like George W. Bush or the Dick Cheney, they deserve death, pretty much. You know, if you took it into account, how many deaths resulted as a consequence of invading Iraq, not least of all the American soldiers that have died, but what about the million Iraqis who have died? All right, these guys should be in jail and or executed, right? That would be reasonable. That would be somebody getting what they deserve. David Rockefeller, all right? He got a little bit of a taste of what he deserved the other day when he was confronted by a Chilean screaming, you know, we don't want New World Order, you're scum, you're killing people, you're a murderer, all right? He deserves far, far worse. But in our very effed up society, those people who deserve to be punished don't. And those people who deserve to live happy, healthy, stress-free lives get nothing of the sort. They get poisoned. You know, whether it be poisoning of the mind or poisoning of the body or whatever, that's what they get. You know, it's almost like being a good person is a sin that needs to be punished consistently, daily. And it's not fair, right? And people think that, oh, well, you know, the world works in a very wonderful way. You know, you're just being negative. Why do you have to care about everybody else? Ah, because I'm part of everybody else. You know, I can't really separate myself from my entire country and the rest of my species because I'm part of it. Okay? It means I'm part of the problem. It means I have to be part of the solution as well in order to get anything that I deserve out of it, you know? Justice is something that should be visited upon everybody who deserves it, whether or not it be good justice or bad justice. Doesn't matter. Just give me justice.
If I could choose, Vinny, if I could choose not to live in this society and let all the people who want the government to make all the choices for them at the supermarket and at the freaking video store, all the people like Bomber over here, all the leftists in the United States, all the big government stooges everywhere, if they could choose to live in their utopia with middle management scum, government running everything, and I could choose to live in my society, then I wouldn't give a damn. And then, frankly, they could have it for themselves and I wouldn't do anything. But the problem is they're getting their way and they're pushing their will onto me. And then they get to decide how I get to live and how my children get to live and all the rest of it. You know, and the little bastards haven't got any right doing that. They don't understand I have individual rights. You know? You have individual rights. You got to tell them, you can't do this. You can't force a carbon tax on me and expect me to pay it. You can't invade foreign nations and expect me to pay for it.
Well, the thing is, they do expect you, and you do pay for them because there's nothing you can do, you know, quite literally. You can't just stop filling up your car with gas because there's a portion of tax on it that you don't want to pay because you have to keep filling your car up with gas because you keep going around.
We need mass tax revolts.
Yeah. The taxation is revolting, and so we'd probably best revolt against it. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show with Will. Gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz. Whitehall chief blocks publication of Blair's notes to Bush on Iraq to save him from public exposure and disgrace. This in from GorillaMedia.co.nz. Britain's top civil servant, Sir Gus O'Donnell, is preventing the official inquiry into the Iraq invasion from publishing notes sent by Tony Blair to George W. Bush. Evidence described by the inquiry as of central importance in establishing the circumstances that led to war. O'Donnell, the cabinet secretary, consulted Blair before suppressing the documents. It emerged tonight. The cabinet office said there is an established convention covering papers of a previous administration whereby former ministers would normally normally be consulted before release of papers from time to time in government. The Prime Minister's spokesman said David Cameron had not been consulted. Raising the stakes ahead of Blair's rule on Friday, Sir John Chilcot, the inquiry's chairman, released a sharp exchange of letters with O'Donnell in which he repeated requests for the notes to be declassified. Chilcot said that the material requested provides important and often unique insights into Mr. Blair's thinking and the commitments he made to President Bush, which are not reflected in other papers. In a letter dated 6th of January, his third to O'Donnell in less than a month, Chilcot wrote that the question when and how the Prime Minister made commitments to the US about the UK's involvement in military action in Iraq and subsequent decisions on the UK's continuing involvement is central to its considerations. He refers to passages in memoirs, including Blair's autobiography, A Journey, and disclosures by Jonathan Powell, Blair's chief of staff, and Alistair Campbell, his former head of communications. Those publications and the refusal to disclose Blair's notes, Chilcot said, leads to the position that individuals may disclose privileged information without sanction, whilst a committee of privy councillors established by a former prime minister to review these issues cannot. Chilcot, who, with his four-member panel, was privately seen Blair's notes, said the documents illuminate Prime Minister Blair's position at critical points. O'Donnell replied to Chilcot that releasing Blair's notes would damage Britain's relations with the US and would not be in the public interest. Yeah, of course. Disclosure is not in the public interest. We have attached particular importance to protecting the privacy of the channel between the Prime Minister and the President, he told Chilcot. And, you know, isn't it funny how international collusion kind of all happens behind closed doors, and the public who get directly affected by all of these things never get to know anything that's being said whatsoever, full stop. Okay, you know.
It's great, isn't it?
Isn't it? You know, that's the system that we have. You're a member of the public. You voted for me. Therefore, you're scum, and I'm going to keep you out of the loop. Oh, goodness. You know, in evidence to the inquiry last year, Campbell described the tenor of Blair's notes to Bush as, "We share the analysis. Oh, wait. We share the analysis. We share the concern. We are going to be with you in making sure that Saddam Hussein is faced up to his obligations and that Iraq is disarmed." Campbell added, if that cannot be done diplomatically, it is to be done militarily. Britain will be there. That would be the tenor of the communication to the president. You know, it's just the same thing, you know. They go in, it's like a sycophantic argument, you know, or somebody who's not like trying to do science for the sake of science or in any kind of scientific method. They start off with an objective, but they don't look at anything objectively. Ah! For example, the objective is to remove Saddam Hussein. You know, if I was to say, well, Saddam Hussein doesn't have weapons of mass destruction, so why are you trying to remove him? Okay, well, we can't justify that, but we're going to do it anyway. You know? Well, why, may I ask you, Mr. Blair, are you deciding that's a brilliant idea? You know, riddle me this. Freaking scumbag. Gets like £400,000 or something like that each of his speaking engagements. You know, wanders around selling his freaking autobiography, A Journey, as if he's some freaking adventurer. Yeah, mate, we went over to Iraq. We blew the heck out of some of them sand people, you know.
Oh, they're all adventurers, Vinny, though. That's the spirit of these people, isn't it? They're all.
No, seriously. Well,
it's like that David D. Rothschild piece of garbage.
Yeah. An image comes to mind of some British explorer with a pith helmet, you know, shooting down black people in Africa. You know, that's the extent of their exploration. You know, isn't it wonderful? We're doing it all for the good of the country, isn't it?
Got a white elephant, too, dear. Yes. Beautiful animal. Yeah. Look good on my wall, in my grand castle, Chateau de Masonry.
Chateau de Masonic, innit? Yeah. Oh God. I mean, it's just ruthless, isn't it? You know, they're just scum. You know, seriously. And this is the point that I try to make all the time, and I'm not sure if anybody believes me or if anybody can even argue with me for that matter. If you become the leader of a country, You've already sold out and you're total scum. Okay? You cannot be the leader of a country without being a sold out total piece of scum. It's not possible. The whole system is geared to give those who have a disproportionate amount of evil the top jobs. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. And we'll be right back after the break.
Women and children, front lines, log on, tune in, stand and be counted. Wounded stations in the belly of the vulture. Watch your back, there's no civilians. Women, children, front lines, listen. Consider this a distant, early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
On the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, broadcasting live on in counting 25 and now 26, I believe, live radio stations around the world, including our fabulous flagship station in New Zealand, Rush 89 FM in Hamilton. And we have a very special treat for you, ladies and gentlemen. The owner slash operator slash Führer of Rush 89 FM Hamilton, Roy Harlow, joins us on the show today. Roy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. Now, there's a lot of rigmarole involved with starting up a radio station, and I wanted you to just come on and just sort of explain to our listeners and yours as well, I guess, just exactly how difficult it is to get Rush up and running.
Well, what can be said? The issue always is getting sponsors and staff, and it's a people issue because radio is supposed to be for the people. It's supposed to broadcast data, information, good music, etc. And the station that we got was known for quite a long period as, you know, heavy and hard rock. And so I decided, yeah, let's stay with that. Let's not change that side of it. But let's add in that portion that's missing. And that is that stimulates you to think about things. And I've got signs in every room that says, report on issues that actually affect our lives. And this, our attempt is to take it out of the noise, out of the useless, senseless talk, and try to bring it into some substance. One of the things we've done is we've gone around and looked for serious quotes from great men throughout history. And they talk about, you know, your responsibility if you have freedom. And we're putting these kind of quotes on every three or four or five songs as a stimulus for people to think about what are they actually going through and are they actually getting the most out of their life, contributing the most to society, and are they seeing things for what's really going on? Because I think that's part of what's happening is that the people who want to control us are getting very expert at not letting us know they're doing it.
And I suppose, you know, when you are trying to do get something of substance out there, you become prone to substance abuse.
Well, whenever you say the truth, somebody will complain.
Yeah.
It's just kind of the way it is. Yeah, you seem to stir up something deep inside. Because what happens is an individual has basically got to be in denial. And if you say something that cracks through their conscience and hits the denial button, they end up attacking you. And they miss the message because they're in denial. So, yeah,
that's we right, Roy. I mean, flack. To be well-liked, you have to say things of no substance, don't you, Roy? I mean, you just have to just reinforce the ignorance. And then people, they're just a non-judgmental, lovely person.
Well, that's generally speaking what radio is now. It's very little substance and a lot of discussion of superfluous subjects. And if you're going to be a contributor...
And if you want to be a contributor, you know, you've got to actually say something of consequence, don't you? Yes. Our very special guest is Roy Harlow from Rush 89 AFM in Hamilton. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. Made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. So what you wanna do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know can flow like this? Like this? Like this? Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any, not many, if any. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this?
I don't know anybody. Check, check to the mic, check. Welcome back to the show with the Hard Nails crew from New Zealand. About as dangerous a group of people as you could ever conceive of. Don't mess with us. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. We're all kittens. Now, welcome back also to our very special guest coming at us live from the Tron, the city of Agenda 21, Roy Harlow. Welcome back to the program.
Yes, sir.
Now, hey, well, speaking of which, you've had some difficulties because essentially, as far as I know, the crew at Rush FM currently is a bunch of awesome, cool cats, all truthers, you know. Dedicated, onto it, intelligent, capable people, right? And you've gotten rid of, and you've had to go through a lot of people in order to get that good, nice, honest, decent truth of crew there. And it's been a long time coming as far as radio in this country is concerned, and certainly applaud you for that. Now, in terms of investigative journalism, Agenda 21. Coming down in Hamilton, you've been trying to get some information about that. What have you discovered about its implementation in Hamilton?
Okay. We found that back in 92, when it was actually first pushed by the United Nations, the I think it's called ICLEI, is the non-government organization that is being used by the UN to bring Agenda 21 to the world. And at that time, Hamilton was selected as one of the primary cities to start as an example, shall we say, an example city. And so Hamilton City Council signed up. And they're kind of now on the level of a model city because that's been quite a few years now. And they're supposedly leading the way as an example. One of, I think, 25 worldwide. And so they're in at the early stage, and they're supposedly bringing forward the implementation in a rural setting such as we have here. But if you go to the Hamilton City Council website, there is absolutely minuscule mention of it all. And if you keep working, you'll end up with a link you can click on, and it goes to another, and it's not a government website, so it's not even listed as who it's run by or whatever, but it's called Future Proof. And on Future Proof, they're talking about all the great things they're going to do for Hamilton over the next 50-year period, and they're showing the plan, et cetera, et cetera. And when you start reading that, then you get the picture of what's going on. Now, you guys are New Zealanders, so you do understand that the rural heritage in this country is still very strong, and it's not an overpopulated country. And everyone is very much green. They live all the, even the little sections are green and treed up, and everybody's into their gardening. It's quite a standard in this country. But in the Agenda 21, they're talking about 50 families in a hectare. They're talking about high-risers going right into the center of town. They're talking about restricting the number of cars you can have per family. They're talking about restricting subdivision of farmland. And it's not bad. If you've been to Hamilton, you only have to go, I would say, 2 kilometers, and you're into farmland in any direction. So it's not seriously overpopulated, and there's not been a lot of arable land sacrificed for urban sprawl. But according to this, they're going to stop it as soon as possible, and they're going to do concentration on that land that's already been developed, and they're going to go up. And so the Hamilton people are completely oblivious to this. As I said, if you go to the Hamilton City website, you'll see nothing. And you have to really be looking for something and dig and find out that we're held up as a model city, and this is what they're planning. So at Rush FM, we're going, well, this is exactly what we're about. We're looking at global issues that affect us in our lives right here in town.
So we've been bringing that out. I've just gone to the website, futureproof.org.nz, and I've gone to their links to council's Hamilton City Council page, and already it sets the premise, it sets the mood. So you come in here, and it's blue and green, and it tells you that 131,000 people live in Hamilton, and it tries to over-exaggerate it by saying it's 3.2% of the New Zealand population and is the fastest-growing city in the country. And it has a youthful population. Around half the residents are under 30 years old. So once again, it's saying that there's a whole bunch of young people, a whole bunch of people in general, a whole bunch of them are young, and then they're going to reproduce, obviously, bad, whatever they're trying to set in motion there. But then also it links straight to Hamilton City Council, Waikato District Council, Environment Waikato, and Matamata District Council also. So it's, and then it has links down the bottom. LTCCP 2009-19, Hamilton City Council's long-term council community plan.
Right.
So
and that's,
it is an official.
Backwards. If you go into Hamilton City Council, you don't find it. You got to go into the, as you just did, Future Proof, and then you link your way back, and you find that actually this mentality, as you're just showing us, has spread in the region, and the councils, et cetera, are all getting on board because they're pushing it as a version of sustainability. Now, to me, it's just greenwashing.
But here they say, then if you go to the council link, they claim that under the Local Government Act of 2002, the same act they don't follow here in Auckland, they have to every 3 years produce a long-term community plan. And then the plan is for the next 10 years. So every 3 years, they have to come up with a 10-year plan. But then if you go back to the other link, they say it's a 50-year plan.
Yes.
So
what they're doing is they're proposing something pretty generic, but then you see it's actually functioning. They're actually progressing it, spreading it in the region and bringing in other councils. They're actually actively spreading the misconception that Agenda 21 is a type of sustainability.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're afraid of overpopulation, which I don't think is really going to happen considering what have we got. Like, we don't even replace the amount of people that are born in this country now because everybody's so freaking sterile from all the fluoride in the water and all the toxic stuff in our food supply.
And the biggest thing is, Vinny, if they were afraid of overpopulation, then they would want to make us more economically, sufficient. Because it's shown the poorer people are, the more children they have, the wealthier households become. That's why the reproduction rate amongst white Americans is 1.3 per household, not even close to the 1.6 to 1.9 you see in Britain.
Well, I think there's a few points in here that you have to look a little bit deeper, if I may, and that is that we have a lot of people that have left this region and gone to Australia, and the youth side of it is reducing dramatically now. As you know, the economy in New Zealand and the rest of the world is suffering. And so we find that the manufacturing sector and the laborer class, a huge portion have left and they've gone to Australia. So the statistics are very old, and we find that the population average is much older than they led you to believe. Similarly, the ability to support population, this area could support massive amounts of more population, but we have the issue you were talking about, I believe, earlier, that they're keeping agriculture at the chemical input concept, which is keeping fertility down and keeping contamination up. And so they're using one to support the premise of the other, and they're keeping statistics out of date, and they're not overt about what they're actually planning and that their plan is an active plan.
Well, that's what we talked about yesterday, is that it's one lie built upon another that's supported by another and supported by another.
and the biggest lie that they've pushed is this whole idea that CO2 is responsible for the warming. You know, this whole idea of 385 parts per million being a dangerous level of CO2 in the atmosphere.
If you want, I'll only talk briefly about global warming because it's such a touchy subject, but I do have an opinion on that, and it's pretty simple. There isn't any doubt that whatever activity man does will have an impact on the planet. But if man is basically in harmony with nature, it's such the system is built in such a way, it generally speaking, regenerates. But what we're seeing now is, I know there's climatic issues, and I'm confident that there's change that is not positive for the planet. But I'm also not foolish enough to think that it's caused by the things they're pointing at. They are in control of the weather, and they are fighting a war. World War III is currently happening on the planet, and they're using weather as the weapon. And all of the other things are more or less symptoms of the disease. The disease is criminal fighting using weather, but the symptoms are all the problems that the common man and the planet are suffering.
And none of the climate change crowd know that the U.S. government admits that they've been manipulating weather for decades, that the Germans admit to a chemtrail program. German government admits to using chemical warfare, in effect, to manipulate the weather.
Well, it wasn't that at the same the 2000 Olympics or 2004 Olympics in China, they promised good weather. They told the world they were going to have good weather for the Olympics.
Yeah, they had these flak cannons, you know those anti-aircraft guns that you kind of like wind up and then just go poof, 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 poof. They were shooting stuff into the clouds in order to clear them up, you know. And indeed, the great thing about communism is that you can just order people to do stuff, and, you know, if they don't do what you tell them, you can just execute them, of course.
And on top of that, they staged a fireworks demonstration with holographics. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was also they also ordered a whole bunch of cars and everything off the roads as well, so that the smog would be reduced, you know,
yes,
so that people could get to work.
Like to say, I think, Will, you did hit on a point. I don't think the people have clicked onto that, too. There's never been such pyrotechnics fever as there is now. New Year's every year is massive, global, and the crap they're shooting up there and they're leaving in the atmosphere is really... Well, not only is it toxic, but what is the intent?
There's definitely
mineral content, metal content, etc. It's in the same thing as chemtrails, the heavy metal residuals that are put into the atmosphere.
Just going on.
Hey, well, it's interesting that you say that, because also New Year's this year in Auckland, they had an enormous fireworks display. You know, these things were just massive, and I saw these clouds of particulate dust just basically washing over the entire frickin' city, all into the harbour and everything like this. It was all over the place. You're absolutely correct, and I quite frankly haven't seen a fireworks display of that magnitude before.
And it's happening more and more everywhere. I think 2000 Sydney was one of the most massive in the world.
Yeah.
And since then, we've seen them. I mean, they're blowing crap off from Egypt to Buenos Aires.
Didn't see climate change saying anything. But yeah, I mean, going back once to our population statistics, I was saying that half the population in Hamilton, New Zealand, is under 30 years of age. Just to put it into perspective for our international audience, a lot of youthful New Zealanders, like me and Vinny's age, a lot of guys I know, have gone off to Australia because it's, you know, the land of milk and honey now, supposedly, just as a lot of people thought the streets of the USA were paved in gold back in the sort of 70s.
Well, there's work. What could be said?
Yeah.
There's work, and they pay a better rate there. Than this country pays. It's that simple.
Yeah. But in a relativist structure, it's a better model. It's still a fiat currency under the same thumb and same sort of globalist trash running the place. But hey, it's a different, on the relativist scale, it's better.
I got to give credit. My son says, he says, we're the most beautiful prison in the world.
I mean, that place is too hot for me. So that's one. That's a big downside. I would say. I mean, places like Perth, it's 40 degrees all the time. It's horrible. But anyway, if people want to go there, I suppose.
There isn't any doubt that we're all being subjugated from the banks, the multi-corporations trying to own the natural resources, the governments being owned by the monetary funds. They're trying to own the natural resources. We know we're being subjugated in as many ways as possible. And so, in an essence, the planet, I mean, that's why they call it prison planet, give Alex Jones credit. And so here we are. This is, New Zealand is probably the nicest portion of the prison.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is the exercise yard.
Yeah, this is recreation. I mean, that's what I mean, that we have all these problems, and a lot of people fundamentally know that there are things wrong with the world. They may not want to face them as much as we do. They may not know what to do. But the problem is, then we have a bunch of George Soros, Al Gore, bleeding heart leftist wannabes come in, and then they co-opt people's activism with saying, get behind our brand of activism, which is actually empowering the bankers in their global taxation scheme, but calling it green, calling it environmentalism. And then they capture the phony right in saying, we need to fight Al-Qaeda and all these terrorists are everywhere, and we need to grow this prison electronic control grid.
Well, we don't have an Al-Qaeda, you can see that what the Hamilton City Council is doing is their version of the very same thing.
Exactly. Global warming is a leftist version of the
naive to it. That's the
global warming scam.
They don't see it.
The global warming scam is the leftist version of the war on terror, because most of them can see the war on terror as a fraud, but they can't see this CO2 baloney for what that is.
It's the old story. The bankers get out there and they support both sides of the war. And the Agenda 21 and the globalists, they're supplying both sides of the climate change issue.
Yep.
And in reality, as I said, I don't believe it's either side. I believe it's the guys in the back room that are controlling the weather and fighting different things for economic advantage and political and even military advantage.
Yeah.
What
these people's solutions are, and the solution to CO2 being a bad thing is you need to regulate all human activity by taxing the living bejesus out of it all and making sure that nobody can have a car, have children, have a home, or have a life.
Exactly.
See the ads. I mean, Roy, have you seen the ads the British government's putting up saying you're going to have food redistribution centers, you're going to have cars limited, like you were talking about, no cars? You're going to have these carpooling systems where a government agent drives around your house in your sector, and you get picked up and all driven to your place of slavery, and then you get to go to the food distribution center, but you can't buy meat because that has air miles on it or something. Ad campaigns blowing people up who disagree with climate change.
Yeah. I spent 6 months in London a year or so ago, and it so happened I was on this particular corner outside my hotel, and I was just walking back to my hotel, and there was fire alarms going off. And just one half a block away, there was smoke coming out of a chimney, and this obviously a kitchen fire was going on. And this car drives up, parks next to me, and it's the fire chief. And I said, looks like you got a small fire over there. He said, yeah, this is a kitchen thing. I'm going to go take care of it. So he and the fire crew and the whole thing do it. But the police cordoned off 4.5 blocks for 24 hours.
Well, we will be right back, ladies and gentlemen, in just a moment. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Is about, there's something evolving. whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Finny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz and broadcast on Rush 89 FM in Hamilton, the city of the futuristic Agenda 21 global extermination. And we have the station owner of Rush FM on the line with us. Roy, welcome back.
Thank you, sir. You're saying that, you make me want to move.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe you will. I mean, you know, hold on a second. Maybe we could see if we could relocate Rush FM offshore, like Radio Hauraki did back in the day. You know, a real pirate radio. You know, we'll all chip in and get you a cutlass and an eye patch. How's that?
Aye, matey. Good idea, matey.
Oh yeah. Then you could be a nice corporate raider like John Key.
I don't feel in good company when you talk like that.
Yeah, nobody does when they're around John Key. I mean, our Prime Sinister himself. Now, speaking of Prime Sinister, we were talking over the break about Zeitgeist and what your particular take on it is. Could you just indulge us?
Well, I think the Zeitgeist series, all right, and I think there's three or four or five the way they've done it, but anyway, the Zeitgeist series has been put out as a propaganda mechanism, and I believe that what they've done is they've recognized that there is a shift in the consciousness of the youth of the world, and they don't really want them to get off the couch and get out and make a problem of it, and so they're trying to, first of all, get on side with them. And so they're coming forward and saying, oh, the Federal Reserve, they did this. Oh, the monetary system, they do that. Oh, the bankers, they're this. Oh, the government. And it's really a history lesson. It's not news. But out of the people who don't run in financial circles, it's news. And so they're going out there and appealing to the youth that don't know this through their history lesson. And then they come forward and say, what we need is everything to be rosy, cruisy, happy, easy, no problems, mate. And they'd leave it blank. And I know there was a lot of anticipation of this new Zeitgeist movie to answer those questions that went unsaid, unresolved. But it didn't particularly happen. Now, you attended it, so I won't try to say that, you know, I know better than you. But in general, they're not really putting forward any practical methods to get from where we are today to where they propose that we should be. And so what it's doing is it's leaving an unanswered stigma in the minds of the youth. Now they're saying, yeah, all this is wrong. Man, we got to group together. Or we got to get out of here. Or we got to fix it. But they don't have a functional method or plan to achieve that. So what we have is it's set the stage. So as things deteriorate and they put pressure on us, more taxes, less jobs, food shortages, chemtrail spraying, more disease, all these things upon us, the youth will start rambling and getting more upset and more upset and more upset. And then they'll play the game, which you see regularly now. They say, we'll consult the community. And they let the people off the street come in and say what they think. And we already know there can't be any informed solution presented because they're not fully informed. So then the elites that are running this program, that have put out the propaganda called Zeitgeist, they're going to come forward and say, well, we have the solution and we're going to get you to that utopia. And it's called Agenda 21. And it's right back to marching them into the camps, so to speak, or marching them into the restricted living experience under the banner of sustainability and green living. And it's not, it's just sliding the youth off to the side. I liken it to the images we've seen in the movie Soylent Green. You're there protesting because there's no food, so they sweep up a whole bunch of people and take them in the back room and turn them into food.
You know, I agree. I mean, saying that no one has to work and the machines will do everything and all of this is kind of appeasing to many. And you know, there might be some truth to some of those arguments, but you know, to say
technically
that,
they say about 25% of employment will remain, but continue.
Well, what really gets me is then who decides which goes, who stays, who goes. I mean, who ends up landed in the remaining labor? Is there going to be some sort of caste system?
Well, I think that's being done by the control of the chemtrail spraying and the aspartame and fluoride and la la la. They're going to let a natural method of attrition due to poisoning determine that.
And we've been deindustrialized forever. I mean, New Zealand used to have car manufacturing plants. So did Detroit.
Yeah, all the industry gone. That's right.
But I mean, but the idea why I think Zeitgeist is dangerous, why I think the philosophies behind it are dangerous, is because I think I know where Peter Joseph is coming from. He's coming from this empiricist view of the world. The mind is a blank slate, otherwise referred to, if you read some of Aristotle's, one of Skull and Bones' favorite philosophers, tabula rasa. The mind is a blank slate. It's a form of epistemology where everything is derived from perception rather than hardwired, innate responses to the world. And I believe in every organism we see innate tendencies. I mean, I don't know who's ever observed the way a reptile, you know, if you pick up a snake and you see the way it observes its surroundings, you could take a baby python, it'll do exactly the same thing. I mean, this is some hardwired, innate responses that you see, especially in certain species on this planet. But humans, I don't think, are any different in that respect. Peter Joseph comes in with this idea that everything can be remade, that we can just wipe everyone's memories clean and then re-educate them in a nice passive collectivist way. I mean, what do you think of that, Roy?
Well. No, I don't believe that's true. I believe that you can influence on a very severe platform, but I don't think you can take away the innate determination for survival. I mean, everybody wants to live forever. Why? And everyone wants to be cared for and to love. Everyone wants to have an exchange of affection. These are greater than the influences that come by the education or lack of the mind and intelligence. Now, I guess I have to put a little of my philosophy so that what I say makes sense, and that is I believe in reincarnation, and I believe in karma. I think it's true that if you do good, you get good, and if you do bad, you get bad. But what has happened here is there's a mistake in the understanding of that karmic thing, because people tend to think, if I do bad, I'll go over here and do good, and it will nullify it. And that's not how karma actually works. There's two separate accounts. You accumulate what good you do, and you also accumulate what bad, and you will reap the rewards.
So it's a balance,
intelligence,
like a scale
is supposed to be used.
System.
Excuse me?
Is that kind of like a balance of the scales we're talking about here, the collective good versus
no,
the collective
not.
Bad?
No, I'm not. I'm saying two separate accounts. And your course of life is determined by which one you accumulate. So you have to be aware. When a man is actually intelligent, he goes, well, my best self-interest is to do good. And so they then have a karmic reaction that leads them better and better and better. And then if you go to the reincarnation concept, let's say the person who has a 50% good and a 50% bad, they'll take birth and have a 50-50 life. So if you have a person who has 75% good, you can see they take birth and have a better life. So I believe that those functions are natural laws. It's cause and effect. There's physical law. For every action, there's a reaction.
How do we explain monsters like David Rockefeller? How do we explain monsters like David Rockefeller enjoying the best this planet has to offer for near on 100 years?
because they are necessary for a certain type of karma to be delivered to a certain class of man. The world is a mixed bag, and some people deserve that great life and karma, and some people who've been really lousy, they deserve to get it bad. And we see that there is a polarization on the planet right now. And there's the good people are finding each other, and they're waking, and they're
purifying
themselves.
But the bad people have got it good. The bad people have got it good for so long.
Well, you know, I'd probably say that they do have it good in the physical sense of the word, but I don't think they're actually really happy, you know?
They're just miserable scum,
you know?
They don't even know
what true happiness is. But yeah, go ahead, Will.
I'm not arguing they're actually fulfilled or anything. I'm just arguing that they get, you know, all the Aston Martins and chateaus and women they could want, you know what I mean? Like, in a materialistic, measurable sense on this earth, of so-called success, they have it.
Well, if enjoyment was the goal of life, 99% of the people would be happy because everybody's trying to enjoy. So that's not it. And everybody who gets wealth and resources, they all will tell you it doesn't really make you happy.
A lot of people think life's a party.
I'm talking about real happiness, you know, where you're elated. You're a really good, kind, happy, stimulated, positive being, and you radiate that to others. You find that very rarely now.
And that's the thing, right? You know, our entire society has gotten pretty freaking miserable because they've been, channeled, really, like a river that's been diverted away from the course that will steer them past nutrition and all these other things like having a nice family, having honest, good, open relationships with your friends, things of that nature that actually really do make people happy, engagement with your community, seeing your children grow up to be intelligent and more successful than you are. Those things have almost been entirely eradicated and replaced with things that don't matter, you know?
Well, that's wholesomeness. But, I mean, going back to Peter Joseph's empiricist view of the world.
I say that's part of the plan, to remove morality and valuing those things that are on the subtle plane. They're trying to make us value the gross substances and toys.
So ultimately, do you think that's what this empiricist model versus a Cartesian sort of model is about? It's about removing all sorts of all value systems?
No, it's about accepting the correct ones. Everything in the whole manifestation is duality. There's good and there's bad.
Peter Joseph argues with that. He says there's nothing good or bad. Those are just attachments we give to certain behavior. That there's aberrant behavior and that there are positive.
If there was no control in the universe, if it was a godless perspective, there was no control, that's his premise. But there are laws here. This is under the control of somebody because if you touch fire, you will be burnt. It doesn't matter age, sex, gender. This is a fact of nature. And there are facts.
Here's a big question, Roy. Does everyone need to accept that premise? I accept that premise, that there is a God. But does everyone need to accept that premise in their life to understand the truths that flow from such? That's a big question. Yes.
You have the free will to accept or reject the premise. True. But you get a different result if you accept it. And what we have is a society that's godless and is accepting the negative premise, and it's making society negative. And our examples to one another, our treatment of one another, the experience, the atmosphere, the whole hive aspect of our reality is all going negative because we're taking the wrong premise, and it's being propagated, it's broadcast in every field, every medium, every mind control, all the different conceptions.
And then because people have this vacuum in their lives that something greater should fill, because they have this vacuum, then their government powerful people and institutions put themselves in that vacuum, don't they, by default somehow?
Yes, they artificially fill it with something that they can attach to, because humans do attach. We do get attached to things. That's one of our tendencies.
So these people are addicted now to the Barack Obamas of the world, and now we're getting what we deserve.
Well, you see it, the fervor, the fervor of patriotism, et cetera, et cetera. It's gone way past logical.
Oh, yeah. It's getting out of control, ladies and gentlemen, thankfully. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, you fabulous listeners out there who are just playing the coolest cats on earth. God, I'm full of myself. Now, we have our very special guest, Roy Harlow, joining us live from Hamilton. And we're going to try and end this show on a positive note about how you can learn things and what can you do about this terrible system. Roy, welcome back.
Hi. Well, yeah, during the break we were discussing there, and I'll just put a little bit out. Our learning mechanisms and how we're taught, there's a certain amount of innate fixtures in us. And as we were saying, everybody's falling into line. Everybody's following too much. And they're trying to deny now that I have any innate training and that actually I'm learning it by moment, even though they're only selecting by what's available. But if you have question whether you have innate morality, you just go visit a slaughterhouse. You go watch an abortion. You actually experience them, and your innate desire, your innate training, your innate principles, morality, will come to the front immediately. And you will realize, wait a minute, I have a moral responsibility to mankind and myself. And then you realize things aren't important. This sojourn of life needs to be morally sound, not economically sound. And this is what we have. We have teachers with nicotine stains all over their hands trying to tell the students, don't smoke. And the red cheeks, hungover, bloated professor telling people, don't drink. And you can't make a strong society from a hypocritical example.
Well, this is so the separation of church and state, right? I mean, they separated it, and there's lots of arguments for and against, but ultimately it gives them
morality is not necessarily a church issue.
No, I know, but then it gives them the premise, though, gives them the ability to separate morality from legality, so no one cares if the police officer breaks a moral code when he pulls you over. All they care about is whether he sticks to a legal code.
And a lot of that happens on purpose. You've hit the nail on the head. That is part of the agenda, for you to realize that they can break the moral rules, and so you think you can, and you don't hold up your own personal standards, morals, and ethics. It's like as the great man does, or as the authority does, the citizens follow. And they're being given the example that the leaders are liars, crooks. The police are, questionable. The teachers are unqualified. And so they sit back and go, well, I may be unqualified, but I'll wing it.
And we have a society. And they sit back and they moan about the crime statistics. And they use that as another premise to do, you know, to up the police state. And so it goes.
That's right. And they'll use all of these different things as premise for control justification. But the reality is self-control is a human responsibility. I can't change you or anyone else, but I definitely can change me. And they're trying to destroy that fact. I don't have to succumb to the lowest common denominator. I can say, I'm sorry, but I don't do that. But that's not being trained into society any longer. It's all
turned to
whatever you can get away with, good on ya.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, it's just like the media, for example, no longer represents any real human being. It's like they've taken the me out of media.
Yes.
That really is it, isn't it? It's lost touch, and because it's lost touch, everybody who consumes it also does as well.
Yes.
You know?
It's a contamination. Like if someone has the flu in class, the next week 10 kids are missing. It's contamination. And we're being, and you can see it all over the world. We get the same news within a half an hour. And they're keeping us on a controlled contamination. Just like an immoral farmer keeps his cows on a controlled starvation. So we have to recognize that irrespective of what's being fed to me, I have my own ethics and moral responsibility to lead a pious or a positive or a progressive life if I want life to get better for me and others as my contribution dictates. Mm-hmm. And we have to take that responsibility. That's human. Animals can't discuss this. Animals can't be in a contemplative state. Animals can't take responsibility. They're driven by sense desire. But humans, we can actually take responsibility. And we're supposed to.
But, you know, so many people these days, they think that responsibility is something for elected officials. You know, it's a responsibility is somebody else's job. And they define their very lives themselves as though their job is what defines their life, you know? And I find that very, very perplexing to me, because how could
that
you, if your life is about your job, is it really your life, or are you just living a workplace?
Well, what you've described, Vinny, is the characteristics of a victim in human society nowadays.
Yeah, it's a slave. You're a slave.
That's
if you
right.
define yourself that way. Yep.
It's victimized to reduce as much as possible your independent thinking and your self-respect and self-control. And as you were saying a moment ago, you tend to turn it over to someone else. It's somebody else's elected official, yada, yada. Someone else's responsibility that I'm a good boy. No.
But the elected officials are supposed to do the exact same thing. When you try to hold them to account, they pass the buck too. So what do you think
it's
right. You know, it's
the way
it's
I
like
see
a,
it though.
It's like this endless, endless sand dune shift, you know. It's like it just wobbles and waffles and consistently balls up everything, you know.
And,
come on.
Isn't the fixing, isn't the solution just in realizing this? Isn't the solution just a change of heart, a change of
You said let's end this program on a positive note, and I'd like to answer that question and leave it on a positive note. Are we out of time already, guys?
Go do it real quick, Roy.
Okay.
Real quick.
You can learn by example, or you can learn by experience. And if you get information, you become empowered. And then you can pass on that information, and someone else is empowered. And this starts a positive change.
We'll be back tomorrow, folks.